Well, welcome. We're glad to have you here today for this important Sunday. Obviously, everyone who's online right now knows we are having this service online only, so I'm not delivering this to a live studio audience, but we are having this day after Christmas. It's been such a busy month, all the Christmas festivities and the extra Christmas service, because we do more than usual around the birth of Jesus. And then, of course, today, taking this Sunday after Christmas and before New Year's to do an online service and letting much of our work, our volunteer team, travel or have a Christmas break. We're glad to have you joining us online today. Reminder that at the end of the message, we're going to take communion together. So if you are not prepared for that and want to get some supplies ready before that time, of course, we encourage you to do so. We just finished taking a few weeks off of the life of Jesus to talk about Advent and Christmas season. And then starting next Sunday, the first two Sundays of January, we're going to be doing a two-week mini-series called I Said This and You Heard That. Very excited about that series. But for today, we're going to come back to where we have been. We've been going through the story of the life of Jesus. And we'll be continuing it in the weeks to come. For today, there's a story that I want to share with you from the Gospel of Luke, the book of Luke. And it's about two sisters who are a part of a family that Jesus knew well. There's a family of, there's these three adults who are all siblings. These three siblings were people very close and important to Jesus. Their names were Martha and Mary, and their brother Lazarus. And we actually can read in the scriptures and see three stories involving them, plus other references to them. But with three stories involving them, one story focusing largely on Lazarus, although he's not super active in that story, as we will see later. But there's one story with Lazarus, there's a couple stories with Martha, and there's like three stories with Mary. And so these are siblings that were all grown adults who were very close to Jesus. Now, from what we understand, these are well-off people. They're financially well-off. We know that in the story of Lazarus that they are in the city of Bethany. We're going to see them at Martha's house today. I don't know if they all lived in Bethany or if she lives in a different place. There's no clarity about that. We don't know if they lived together or apart, but at least one of them, if not all of them, lived in Bethany. And we know that they were financial backers of the ministry of Jesus. Some people who followed Jesus, who believed in Jesus, sold everything they had or left it behind to follow him 24/7. While other people, like these, they believed in Jesus, and they did not follow him day and night, but they supported him and the work financially as the others did so. And that's what we understand to be true about this family. They are very close friends. Jesus is close to his disciples because they're with him all the time, and many others, but these are three dear friends of his, and they're very close to his heart, as we're going to see even more so down the road when we come back to them later. Before today, we meet the sisters, Martha and Mary, for the first time in Luke chapter 10. Let's jump on into the story. It says in Luke 10:38 that as Jesus and the disciples continued on their way toward Jerusalem, they came to a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. Now, I want you to notice the phrase, Martha welcomed him into her home, because this is who Martha was. She was a very hospitable person, and she was a very intentional person. And, of course, to have a home big enough to welcome Jesus and his disciples into it, where they're most likely going to have lodging and are clearly going to have a meal, means her house is sizable. I don't think the houses in those days or her house would have been as big as the large homes that we have in the modern Western culture that in so many places in the world today. But the house was no doubt big for many others, as she's well off. and she's hosting Jesus because that's who she is. And we're going to see this down the road in a future story without getting ahead of ourselves today. She's always going out of her way to greet Jesus when he's around, to welcome him, to host him, because she wants to be with him. She wants to be in his presence and spend time with him and serve him and get to know him better as a friend. So Martha is welcoming him into her home. And as we're going to see as we read the story more, Martha has a certain... She has a certain bias for action. She has a certain, she's a doer, and she wants to get busy, you know. Come to my house. I have a nice place. I'm going to host you here. I'm going to prepare for you to get here. I'll feed you while you're here. She's just an action-biased person. And then she has a sister. We're about to meet her in verse 39. It says, her sister Mary sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he taught. So there's a lot going on here too. Mary, as we're going to see here, and we'll see traces of this later as well. Mary is more, while Martha's more action-biased, Mary is more empathetic. She's more of a people-oriented personality, while Martha seems to be more task-oriented by nature. You know, they're sisters, but if you have siblings, you know that you can have a lot of things similar because you're family, but also have some things that are unique about you. And Martha and Mary are sisters, but one's more task-driven and one's more people-focused. And that's just, thank God for both kinds of people, right? That's how the world works. And Martha's hosting and doing all this work. Mary is in the room, and she's sitting at the feet of Jesus. Why? Because apparently while Jesus is in the house waiting for the food that's being prepared, he's teaching. Now, Jesus is always teaching. People are always gathered around. You know, wherever he goes, there's a crowd. And even in this house, in a more intimate setting, somehow the conversation turned into something where Jesus begins to talk and everyone begins to listen. And next thing you know, he's teaching in this more intimate setting. And Mary, she's excited. That's why they want him there, to hear what he has to say. They want to get closer to him, to get to know him better. And so she is at his feet, and she's drinking it up because that's who she was. And we'll see that more as time goes on. It says in verse 40, but Martha was distracted by the big dinner she was preparing. I think that word distracted is interesting because Martha obviously wants to have Jesus there to spend time with him as well. She wants to be in a moment like this, but she's been distracted because there's food to prepare, and someone's got to do it. And so that has, you know, while Jesus was brought there to be with them, the work of serving him while he's there became a consuming project for Martha and distracted her. And I can imagine how much work she's doing. I don't know if she's cooking alone for all these people, maybe, or maybe because they're fairly well off, she has helpers or servants or volunteers. But even if there's other people involved in the process of making all this food, when you're the person in charge, you know how it is. She's got to go to every spot, make sure everything's on schedule and nothing's wrong, and she's got to dote over everything because ultimately it falls on her. So she's busy, and she's distracted by all the preparation for the big dinner that they're all going to have once it's ready while Jesus is out teaching in the house. And others, like her sister, are gathered close by and listening. But Martha probably is getting, well, we know she's getting frustrated because Mary's not helping. I can imagine her walking through the room occasionally to check on the next detail, and she sees Mary just sitting there at the feet of Jesus, and she's thinking, oh, that must be nice. I'd love to sit down too. There's a lot to be done here. I could sure use a little help. And I wonder if she clears her throat a couple times when she walks through, hoping that Mary will hear and notice it and feel a sense of responsibility to help her. But either way, nothing changes. Finally, Martha reaches a breaking point in her frustration. It says in the next part of the verse that she came to Jesus and she said, Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work? Tell her to come and help me. Wow. Now, it's possible, and I don't know, it's possible that Martha pulled Jesus aside into the hallway to say that to him privately between things that he was teaching. But I don't think so. It doesn't make sense. We see other stories where someone pulls Jesus aside to say something, and usually that detail's recorded. We saw that happen once with Peter in an earlier story. No record of Martha pulling him aside. The story seems to indicate that Martha walks right into the room, up to Jesus, and she says this to him with Mary right there listening. I mean, Mary's in earshot. She's talking about Mary in the third person to Jesus and complaining about her. And no doubt other people are around listening. I mean, this is kind of an awkward moment. And Martha's like, listen, Lord, this is unfair, right? You see that it's unfair, don't you? That I'm working so hard while she just sits here? Tell her to help me. I wonder what Mary's thinking in this moment. I wonder if Mary is embarrassed, or she's like, oh, I should have helped her, or I feel called out. Or maybe she rolls her eyes and says, oh, there's Martha again, always fussing about the details. But either way, it's awkward. In verse 41, it says, but the Lord said to her, my dear Martha, you are worried and upset over all these details. Now Jesus is about to give Martha a shift in perspective. I don't think he's scolding her. He's not berating her. Again, these are very precious friends to Jesus. Look what he says. He says, my dear Martha. He's not saying, what's wrong with you, you crazy woman? He's not insulting her. He is simply wanting to shift her perspective on what's happening and give her a different outlook. And so he does it in the most gracious way. He looks at her and says, my dear Martha, you're worried and you're upset over all these details. Now, why would he say that? Because she was worried and upset. She was so worried and upset about the details that she is fussing about her sister in front of a bunch of other people. That's not healthy. There's nothing good about that. When someone does that to you or you do that to somebody else, we know that that's not appreciated. It's hurtful. It's demeaning. And what Martha's doing when she says these words to Jesus is not kind, but in Martha's mind, it's justified because she's so, what does he say? She's so worried and upset about the details of the food that she's convinced that her sister not helping is unfair and deserves to be called out without thinking about how harsh and hurtful she's being in doing so. And so Jesus is like, my dear Martha, you're so upset, you're so worked up, you're so worried about all the details, all the food. And I think to myself that Jesus could have said to her, look, I'm grateful for the food, but we weren't going to starve. I mean, this is the same Jesus that once fed thousands of people with no food because he took a 5 loaves of bread and 2 small fish. He could have made a big meal. Now, I don't think he would say that to Martha because that would be demeaning to the thing that she was doing to out of kindness and probably with a masterful touch in the preparation, better than a mass-produced large meal for a huge multitude, right? So he's not going to say that to her, but he's thinking, you're all worked up about this meal and to the point that you're coming in here and venting in front of all of us because your sister's not helping you. And then Jesus says to Martha, he says, there is only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her. Interesting. His point was there's one thing worth being concerned about, and it's not the food. Not that the food's not appreciated or important. It is. We got to eat. But here's the thing about the food. We got to eat, but then once we eat, we got to eat again the next day and the next day, right? It's not like this food is so amazing that no one's ever going to have to eat again. At best, it'll be a memorable meal that people will look back on fondly, but it's going to have to be done over and over again. And so it's important. But if you want to be concerned about something, Jesus said, he said, I'm teaching something in here. I don't know how it came to be that Jesus is teaching in this house setting, and yet Mary figured out, I got to be here. And Martha wanted him to be there for these very reasons, to be in his presence. But she's gotten distracted. And Jesus says, Mary is taking what I'm saying, which will last, the things I'm teaching are going to last a lot longer than a meal. That the meal will come and go and have to be replaced, but what I'm saying can last in someone's heart going forward. My words are life. Jesus would often say things like, you hear about temporal food, which won't satisfy you forever, but I'm the bread of life. And so he says to Martha, look, one thing is worth being concerned about. And it's the things I'm talking about, these eternal matters. And he says, Mary has discovered that. She, in the middle of all the chaos, has discovered the importance of that. And I'm not going to take that away from her. I'm not going to chase her out of the room and say, what's wrong with you? Go help your sister in the kitchen. He says, listen, this is important. By the way, we should never want to chase someone away from pursuing their faith or discourage them because they're not doing what we think is most important. What a sad thing to do, because who knows if down the road you'll wish they did have an interest in exploring their faith. Who knows if maybe down the road someday Mary, you know, Martha will wish that Mary was listening to something that Jesus was saying. Is he going to chase her away now? No, he's going to say, I'm glad you're here. This matters. You've discovered the most important thing. Now, I want you to notice, that's the story. It's a short story, right? But I want us to take in what just happened. Understand what Jesus was doing just now. Martha, who's very dear to him and doing good things for him in giving him a place to stay, making a meal. Martha and Mary, who loves him and is in his presence. These girls are great. But Martha is openly criticizing Mary, and Jesus is calling her on it. I'm going to say something now that I can't prove. It's my opinion. I think it's an educated opinion, but I can't prove it because what I'm about to say did not happen, and had it happened, well, then we would know it. But I'm gonna give you this opinion that I believe that had the situation been reversed, had the situation been different, had Martha been criticized, Jesus would have stood up for Martha. If Mary had been sitting there listening and watched, all of a sudden she noticed Martha going in and out working, and she would have waited for Martha to come in and said, hey, Jesus, tell my sister to sit down and listen and what she thinks she's doing. I think Jesus would have been like, Mary, really? You're gonna call her out and embarrass her? You want to eat, don't you? Man, it smells great. Come on now. I think Jesus would have stuck up for Martha had she been openly criticized. Now, here's why I believe it. We don't know that because it doesn't happen. But here's why I believe that. Based upon previous experiences with Jesus. There have been other times when Jesus stood up for somebody who was being attacked. One of the best examples is the woman who was caught in the very act of adultery. She was in an adulterous moment. I mean, committing, you know, doing the adulterous deed with a man. Cheating on her husband or on another woman's husband with him and gets caught doing it in the very act, which is very awkward, by the way. And the people who catch her drag her for it. They bring her to Jesus and they want, and it's embarrassing. And she was wrong. Remember that story? I'm on a rabbit trail, but I want to remember that story because what does Jesus do? The first thing he does is he deals with every one of that woman's accusers and gets rid of all of them. Now, he does turn to the woman and say to her, don't do that again. Right, don't do that again. But he sticks up for her when she's being dragged, even though what she did was very wrong, because that's what Jesus did. He did it for his disciples when the religious leaders attacked them. So based upon his track record, I believe that he would have stood up for Martha the same way he did Mary. But in this particular case, Martha is the distracted, frustrated one who is publicly criticizing Mary, and Jesus deals with that. Martha's not a bad person here. Martha is the one who welcomed Jesus into her home. We're going to see a future story that I can't get into today where Martha and Mary are going through tremendous grief. Tragedy strikes nearby them. And Jesus shows up and Martha's the one who pulls herself away from the pain to go find Jesus when he gets into town to welcome and make sure that he's cared for. She's an action person. She's on top of her game. That's who she is. Mary has to be kind of led away from the emotion of the moment to be but brought by Martha to see Jesus because Martha was the proactive one. So Martha's a great woman here in this story and the next story. She's someone that we should cheer for, but that does not mean that she got it all right. We could be good ones too and not get it all right. See, in today's story, Martha, as good as she was, she forgot something that you and I can easily forget. And that is this, that your good thing is not the only good thing, right? Your good thing is not the only good thing. My good thing is not the only good thing. I'm not saying everything's a good thing. There's some bad things, right? everything is not a good thing. But there's a lot of good things that are different good things than my good thing. And it's easy for me to say that if something's different than my good thing, it's a bad thing or it's not as good of a thing. But that's the wrong outlook. For Martha, she was serving. That was her thing. For Mary, she was seeking the presence of Jesus while he taught a little extra. That's a good thing. Ultimately, the reminder for you and me is this. Don't criticize someone who is doing something important for God just because it's different from what you're doing and what I'm doing. Say, well, I'm gifted this way and I'm wired this way and I think this is a big deal and so this is what I'm all about. Hey, don't be so busy doing what we think is important that we demean what someone else is also doing for God that's important because we have a different focus or bent or wiring. Your good thing is not the only good thing. My good thing, not the only good thing. But we're human. And we can forget that sometimes. Honestly, there could have gone a whole lot better had Martha embraced what Mary was doing. Martha could have thought to herself, this is great. I'm getting the food ready, and so Mary can listen because I want to know what Jesus is saying too. Later, when we had done feeding everybody, Mary can tell me what Jesus said to them. And then I'll know too. Wouldn't that have been great? Because of Martha's work, Mary and the others will be fed. And because of Mary's listening, Martha will later hear what Mary heard. So both will get fed physically and both will get fed spiritually because they both work together within their moment. But instead, Martha got upset and criticized Mary for the good thing she was doing. And Jesus had to call her on it. Now, here's what I want to say. And we're going to, of course, Jesus in this particular case makes a big deal about Mary choosing the better thing, the thing that will last longer. So we'll make that point too. But let me show you that both of them are good people doing good things. So let's say it this way. Martha made sure to serve Jesus. Mary made sure to seek Jesus. And here's the thing. Both are important, right? Both are important. Martha made sure to serve Jesus. That's important. Jesus himself said to his followers all the time, hey, the greatest is the servant, right? Over and over again, he told his disciples. Jesus is not diminishing the importance of serving. He magnified it. He said, if you want to follow me, you got to do what I'm doing. I didn't come to be served. I came to serve. You don't want to serve with me. And if you want to be great in my kingdom, then serve. So if Jesus taught that so many times, we've seen it already, we'll see it soon in the future. If Jesus taught the priority of serving, he's not demeaning what Martha's doing here. Martha was doing something good. She made sure to serve Jesus. Now, Mary made sure to seek Jesus, something else that Jesus makes a big deal about. He tells his disciples, while you're serving me, while he'd send them out two by two to the villages to serve him, he'd also bring them back and say, let's get alone together so you could be with me. He would teach them to pray so they could talk to the Father. He'd teach them to seek God. So that's important also. And Martha, and maybe her temperament bent her a certain way when both opportunities to seek and serve were there, Martha made sure to serve Jesus and Mary made sure to seek Jesus. And both are important. Here's the thing. If you only seek and you never serve, you're going to miss what Jesus said so often to those who sought him. People who sought Jesus, he's like, hey, follow me, serve with me. And you're going to miss what he did. If you seek him and never serve him, you're going to miss his heart. He once said, I got to work while it's daytime. The night's coming when I can no longer work. So it's time to be busy serving. I came to serve. Now, if you only seek him and never serve him, you'll miss that. And all the things he calls us to do as his followers. On the flip side of the coin, if you only serve and you never seek, well, you're going to miss what Jesus modeled himself. When he constantly, as busy as he was, would sneak away, sometimes late at night while others were giving him some private time to pray in the mountain or pray in a garden or to get alone on a boat across the lake and find some isolation to be with the Heavenly Father. And here's the thing, if you serve but you never seek, you're going to run out of reasons why you serve. And that's the point Jesus was making today. I think the reason he makes the point to Martha was because Martha called out Mary, so Jesus corrects Martha gently and lovingly. But I think the other point he's making is this, that it's easy to get so busy serving Jesus that we forget to seek him. It's easy to get so busy serving Jesus that we forget to seek him. And that's the story of Martha today, isn't it? I mean, again, why was she having Jesus at her house in the first place? Because she wants to be with him. Why is she doing all that she's doing this time in the future stories? She wants to seek him. But then she realized that to host him, there was work to be done, which is good. And she was doing it, which is good. But she got so busy serving him that she forgot to seek him. And she forgot to be happy for her sister when she had a chance to seek him, because to her, she was consumed with the serving. And that happens to you and me if we're not careful. Let's be honest. I'm serving the Lord before I became a pastor. I've mentioned recently some of the heavy ministry work we did before I ever became a pastor, just serving in our church and outside of our church in multiple ways. And we still today serve as a family, as an individual I serve, and many of you are the same way. But here's the reason why we serve Jesus. Here's why. We serve him because it started by seeking him. All of us who are serving Jesus at one time first heard about him, and it was new to us, and we sought it. We sought him out. We wanted to hear it, and we were drinking it up. And the gospel was new, and we wanted that, and the stories were all new. And for a long time, we were just taking in all this new material and teaching about Jesus and from Jesus. But after a while, you've heard it all. And at some point, as we seek Jesus and as we get to know his story better and know him better, and we pray and talk to him, and as we read his word and learn, and as we gather in services like and listen to him, his word, like Mary was doing today, as it's being taught. As we do that for a while, eventually we feel called to serve him because that's what he calls us to do. The serving is the what, but spending time with him, it tells us why we do it. We do it because he calls us to. And we get busy serving. But if we're not careful, we'll get so busy serving him that we'll suddenly say, there's not enough time to read my Bible, not enough time to pray, not enough time to sit down and listen to a message. I got things to do. That's not as important to me. I don't have time to take anything in. I got to go out and serve him. And I've seen people get disenchanted with sitting back and listening to what God is saying, or disenchanted with their private devotions because it's all about output. But we're supposed to be like a sponge. We need to take in and seek the Lord and absorb what he's giving to us, but we also need to wring it out to make a difference. And if we're busy seeking and never serving, we're missing that important idea. But if we're busy serving and never seeking, well, we're going to ring out and we're going to dry up. In fact, I believe the reason many people burn out in serving Jesus, they burn out because somewhere along the way, they forgot why we do what we do. The why was discovered when we were seeking him, and it drove us to do the what in serving him. But if we start doing the serving and the what and forget to be with him and remember why, eventually we burn out. And it's so easy to get so busy serving Jesus that we forget to seek him. And Martha, I don't think she was way down a dangerous path, but she had gotten flustered, called out her sister, and Jesus had to say, Martha, you're great. You're my dear Martha. But you're a little bit off on this one. Here's my challenge to you today, and my challenge to myself. If you want to have a balanced spiritual life, you have to both seek and serve. Both are important. If you want to have a balanced spiritual life, you got to seek the Lord and then hear his call to follow him and serve him. But never stop seeking him. And maybe someone in this service today, or watching this online today, or at a later time, perhaps someone here is at a spot where you're just seeking the Lord, and I want to encourage you to keep it up. But maybe it's time to also say, what does he want me to do? with what he's given me? How can I help other people be brought in? Martha, by serving Jesus, was making it possible for others to sit and listen because she was busy serving. How can I make it easier for others to be in the presence of God by how I serve him? Find ways to serve. If you're seeking him but not serving him, find ways to start serving. But if you've gotten busy serving him and you've gotten away from the importance of just spending time in private devotions and prayer, scripture, and even sitting back in a service and hearing his word taught like Mary was doing today, maybe get back to saying, Lord, I need to sit back and seek you and remember why I do what I do. Both are important. Seek and serve. And my prayer for you and me as we finish 2025 and as we enter a new year of 2026, that we will find ways to seek and serve our Lord. He's worthy.